pressure coming. Gabbert plants, turns, and he's going for the hole. Ball of wax, and he's got Cecil Short. Short catches it! Touchdown, Jacksonville! Oh, my goodness! What a catch by Cecil Short!
You are amazing, Cecil Short! What a catch!
This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lugeman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and Tony Boselli. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. About an hour of Jaguars This Week for you, presented by Aetna, live from Jaguars Central inside Everbank Field. I'm Brian Sexton. Across the table is Tony Boselli. John Osher from the Ozone at Jaguars.com is here as well.
Bad week for Lagerman to go on vacation.
Well, Lagerman would tell you it's a good week.
Big fumble on his part. Well, yeah.
Because he is up there,
right,
sitting somewhere on his palatial estate in Georgia, doing what he does,
yes,
hunting and skinning things, and you're chasing the stories down.
Yeah.
And dealing with it all. Now, Boselli's going to be the analyst tonight and lay it all out. So, Loggy would tell you it's pretty good. Loggy is out this week. We expect him back next week. Obviously, the big story here is David Caldwell's hiring. It's not completely unexpected because, well, since the first day that Gene Smith was out, David Caldwell's name was on the tip of the tongue. He was an Indianapolis Colt.
Mm-hmm.
You were in Indianapolis. Have you shared with your readers yet? Will you share with us your thoughts on David Caldwell from what you know of him?
Well, I knew Dave up until about 5 years ago, and he left the Colts a couple years before I left the Colts, and you know, I went to, with the Falcons. He's obviously, you know, has come up under Bill Polian, who has a track record, as Tony and I were talking about a few minutes ago, as good as anybody in football in terms he built the Bills, built the Panthers.
Five-time executive.
Yeah, and, you know, so clearly Dave comes from a background that, you know, knows football, knows how to build organizations, knows how to establish communication, knows how to scout, you know, knows how to structure everything. When I knew Dave, it was apparent that he was good. He was very well respected within the organization. For me to sit here and say I knew in 05 that he'd be running an NFL team in 6-7 years, no, because there's a lot that has to go right in that. But he was a guy that, of all the people at that point who were picking players, who were talking about players within that building, he was certainly in the upper echelon of people that had respect.
Well, and he's the second Bill Polian protege to grab a job. Is it Telesco? Tom Telesco just grabbed the job.
Yeah, he was actually the first. I think Tommy got it today.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, and Tom Gamble, who was also on that staff,
he's
interviewed quite
right
a few
now.
Places. Chris Polian, of course, ran the Colts last year. So it was a place with a lot of talented people. It was also a place that had great success, which in this league, it helps an awful lot to have worked for Atlanta, to have worked for the Colts when they had success. It gets your foot in the door, and that's up to you to take advantage of it.
Your thoughts on a young guy, 38 years old, taking over, who was with Thomas Dimitroff in the Falcons the last 5 years, Tony, and that's a program that has been as good as you'd find in the NFC. They're 0-3 in the playoffs, I know, but they've had first-round buys the last couple of years. They've been a great program.
Yeah, I don't know anything about David Caldwell except for his past and what he's done. I do know Thomas Dimitroff, and he's a guy I have a lot of respect for. And I think Thomas is one of the really good young GMs in what he's been able to do there and build that franchise from where it was. You got to remember, that was a franchise that Michael Vick was going to jail. Bobby Petrino had left them in the middle of the year. It was as bad as a situation as you could find in the NFL. It was spiraling out of control. And they hired Thomas Dimitroff, and yes, everyone said, well, he picked Matt Ryan. Well, Matt Ryan wasn't there was teams that passed Matt Ryan.
Right.
It wasn't like Matt Ryan was Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning. I mean, so he drafted his guy that he thought was the guy. And I don't think that was was going to take Matt Ryan as the first quarterback off the board. That coupled with his hiring of Mike Smith, who no one thought was a good hire at the time. I think we all did because
sure,
we knew Mike, but around the league, I mean, it was almost laughed at.
It was a stunning pick.
And
league-wide.
And Thomas Dimitroff has a set of convictions.
Well, the Julio Jones thing just bears that out one step further.
Julio Jones.
And training up.
I thought that was a bad move, and I said, man,
a lot of people did see
you give that many picks for that guy.
For a receiver,
and he had a conviction, and he evaluated how he was building his team and what he did. Now, he's made mistakes. They gave a bunch of money to Ray Edwards, and it didn't work out, and they got rid of him, the Minnesota free agent. But overall, he's built that Atlanta Falcons into the one of the premier teams in the NFC, a team that's going to battle for the Super Bowl. And David Caldwell was under him, and Thomas gives him high accolades. So I think you have to feel pretty good. Now, here's the thing. You don't know ultimately until that guy gets the reins. I mean, this is the first time David Caldwell's ever done this. He has great pedigree. He comes from a great situation, trained under Bill Polian, sure, who we've talked about, under Thomas Dimitroff, who is very well respected and has done a great job. And so all the stars are aligned, and he's obviously and John and I talked about this. He obviously did something right to move up as a area scout, and over the last 15 years as a young man to be the number two guy in Atlanta under Dimitroff, and now sit in front of Shad Khan, who has sat in front of a lot of guys, whether it's football or business, and impressed him enough to say, this is the guy I'm going to trust with. So I feel good about it. I think it's a good choice. Like anything else, like when you hire a coordinator that has never been a head coach, there's a little bit of the unknown. How does that person handle the job and his hand on the switch, so to say? But I don't know who else you could have gotten better, unless you're going to go get a Bill Polian who's done it everywhere. I'm very happy that David Caldwell is our guy.
I think that's what's important to note is, you know, I got an email today from somebody saying, what leads you to believe that David Caldwell is qualified to hire a head coach? And my answer was Wayne Weaver qualified to hire a head coach when he hired Tom Coughlin? Was Thomas Dimitroff qualified to hire a coach when he hired Mike Smith? You know, you don't know. It's just a matter of you go and you pick the guy, as we talked about today, Tony. If you have a good sense about the guy, if he has the pedigree, if he has the background to make you think that he has the tools to do the job, then at some point you've got to look the guy in the eye and say, this is my guy, all the things feel right, and this is what I'm going with. He's qualified, so now it's time to see what he can do in the chair.
Well, tomorrow at 4 o'clock, we'll hear who he is and what's important to him. You know, there was an argument going around, at least in Twitter, over the weekend when it was reported that David Caldwell and Steve Keim were the last two guys. And the argument went this way. Well, you absolutely take the guy from Atlanta because they have a winning team. You don't take the guy from Arizona because they didn't. And I jumped into this, and my take on this is I want to know who he is.
Right.
I want to know what's important to him, what his philosophies are. Clearly, he's learned, studied under two very good. Now, where does he take it to the next level? Because that's what Polian once did.
And the bottom line is, you can say whatever qualifications, it's like Tony alluded to earlier, yes, David has been at places that have won, but he hasn't done it himself. He's had two good quarterbacks with him, so that has helped. Now it's time to see what he can do building. I'm not a big believer that you have to go get somebody who has been to the playoffs X amount of times. You know, Steve Keim was very well respected. If it had been him, clearly Arizona felt good about him. I don't necessarily think that is the end-all criteria to doing this. At some point, it's like you said, you have to sit across from him and say, do I believe what this guy is saying? Can he stick to his convictions? Will he make the right decision when that big decision time comes?
All right. Joe, we're due for a break. Let's go ahead and grab it now. More to come. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna till 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Here on Jaguars Radio. Joe.
You got a BS. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Want to know more and get better in all things Jaguars? Keep it right here on Jaguars Radio. Now, season ticket owners, don't forget to use your Teal Deals and sign up at TealDeals.com. Download over $5,000 worth of gift certificates to use at merchants all over Jacksonville.
Thanks, Joe. Metro PCS call-in line 355-NFL 1-800-355-6351 here on Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. How long into the press conference tomorrow before the question about Coach Mike Mularkey and his status is asked?
There'll be an introductory statement, and then that has to be the first question. And I know, you know, the participants probably won't be crazy about that, but from a journalist's point of view, that's all anybody wants to know at first. And I think there'll be a couple of questions along those lines. And then if nothing is announced, then at that point, you know, you'll move on and talk about Dave Caldwell, the philosophy. But that's what's having everybody's mind. It's just
that's coming up. That question's being asked, and the Tim Tebow question's going to be asked.
Sure.
And do you expect either one of them to be answered?
Well, there's nothing to say about Tim.
Because yeah, sure, he's under contract with the Jets.
And it's a very simple answer, and it has to be asked. But he's under contract with the Jets. There's really nothing for them to say because he's under contract with another team. Who knows what they're thinking? But in terms of saying anything publicly, they can't do that. So that will be a question answered that way, and then you move on.
Let's talk about Mike Mularkey for just a sec here. Mm-hmm. Let's say the Jaguars are leaning towards keeping him, which had been reported at times mm-hmm. that Shad Khan was leaning that direction. What does he have to do in year number two to justify getting year number three? And you can see where I'm going with this. Is it possible? Is it fair, even, if that's the right word, to keep him in that sense and expect him to pull off miracles and then have to go through this all again next year?
Well, I would think
see what I mean? I'm looking for plausibility.
A GM would look for, positive steps, for signs of improvement, for signs of improving late in the season. That's what you sort of look for this year, and it was such a mess. I'm not sure you saw much of anything at the end of the year. And I'm not saying that about Mike. I'm saying the totality of everything was such a mess that it was hard to judge anything. But if he were to come back for next year, it would be considered the first year of David Caldwell's era. So if you're David in that situation, you would look for steady improvement, for signs that guys were getting better, for signs that the team was competing better and starting to win. So I think it's a pretty easy judge. I don't think it means you have to be 10-6, but you have to show
improvement.
But if
you're 5-11?
I'm not sure what number. I kind of thought
this
year,
though, right?
What you wanted to see at the end of this year was signs they were playing better, was for signs that something was dazzling you, and you didn't see that, and that's sort of why we're hanging by a thread here.
Right. Well, I guess what I've been wondering is there any scenario under which this works for Mike Mularkey?
Yeah, I think
if he comes back and wins, it sure does.
Yeah, I mean,
but can you do that with a roster that was 2-14?
Well, I mean, listen,
and it'll be improved, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it was a new coaching situation, but you look at the St. Louis Rams last year; they were 2-14.
Yeah,
and they made a coaching change, so it's a little different. But it was a team that started slow. But
they made a GM switch also.
They changed the whole thing, but by the end, it was a team that was, you felt like, if you're a Rams fan or if you're looking at the NFL, you have a sense going into next year that the Rams are a team that's on the rise.
Yeah, there are many things you can talk about and point to and say, we feel good about them.
And so the goal is whether Mike Mularkey's back or not. Let's put it this way. The goal for this team moving forward is that as you open, from the time you open training camp next year to the end of the season, there's a progression so that throughout the season and by the time you are doing your season-ending press conference after the 2013 season, the feeling in the building, the feeling in the fan base, and the feeling in the NFL is the Jacksonville Jaguars are a team going in the right direction and are on the rise. That's what you want, and if it's Mike Mularkey, that's what you judge Mike Mularkey on or whoever is sitting in that chair.
Maybe the best way to put it is, you know how we all sit here right now and feel pretty good about the receiver position? You want that overall. I mean, you don't feel like the receiver position is the best in the NFL right now, but you feel good about it.
The arrow is pointing.
You feel like, hey, we can build around this. We know what we're getting out of this spot. We feel like maybe a year or two down the road, one of those guys is in the Pro Bowl. I mean, I think we can all say that it's perfectly sane to talk about the receiver position in that way. It's not necessarily sane to talk about the rest of the roster that way right now. What you would want and how you would feel success at the end of next year is if there were 4 or 5 spots that you felt that way about, and overall as a team you felt the way that you do right now about the receiver position.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. It seems as if, and again, I'm reading Jason LaCanfora and that group of national writers that seem to be plugged into all these different situations, and it seems as if overwhelmingly they're all reporting that it is completely unlikely that David Caldwell will keep Mike Mularkey as the head coach, and I'm wondering if you agree with that sentiment or if you think that it's still to be determined.
I think, I'll put it this way, if I was a national guy looking at this situation, I would probably feel the same way.
Okay.
And
that it was 2-14, you're cleaning house.
At the same time, we've all seen so many situations in January. Anytime you try to predict a situation in January, all of a sudden you write that Andy Reid's going to the Cardinals and he winds up at the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So
and there's been a lot of that.
And there was a lot of that regarding this last week. Hey, Tom Gamble's the leader. So-and-so's the leader. So-and-so's the leader. It can change so quick. But if I was a national guy reading the tea leaves, that's what I would predict.
Agree?
No, I mean, listen, I think it's – I get a little bit tired of – and it's the Twitter age we live in, is you can say anything.
And well, Twitter's become a euphemism for newspaper, website.
You can say anything you want without any source or any really background information.
Yeah, but if you're one of those guys, you've got to be able to.
No, but they're speculating. I mean, they're speculating that. I mean, so they heard a rumor, or they talked to someone who talked to someone, or they heard something, and they're speculating. I mean, for all we at this point, I mean,
unfortunately, that's what journalism has become.
David Caldwell hasn't even been in the building yet,
right?
So has he even met with Mike Mularkey? Yeah, I don't know that. And so before I start speculating whether Mike Mularkey's going to be fired or not, I'd like to let the new GM really sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah.
And my guess is that's going to be tomorrow. And him and Mike will sit down, and David Caldwell has a plan. The reason he was hired is because he presented a plan to Shad Khan. Shad Khan said, I like that. And part of that plan, I'm sure, was an evaluation process it's going to go through. Now, I'm not saying that evaluation process is a week long. It can be done in – he might sit down with Mike Mularkey in 15 minutes going, know that it's not the – he's not the right guy, or in 15 minutes say, you know what, this is a guy I believe can be the next head coach. Because what we all have to realize, and this is why most of the time you see when new GMs come in, the coach doesn't make it, is because that GM knows that their livelihood and they're going to be judged based on the decisions they make. And so most of the time the guy who sits in that seat wants control or have their people in place so that if they do fail, they're going to go down doing it their way.
And the only time that's not the case is when the owner feels so strongly about it, and none of us have talked to Shad, but it would indicate that he does not feel that strongly about
it, or
it would have been said already.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, a perfect example of that is look what happened in Chicago. I mean, Lovie Smith was...
And is a good coach.
Is a good coach. He won 10 games and got fired because the new GM, and I can't even think of the guy's name right
Phil
now.
Phil Emery.
Basically had made his mind up that he was looking for a way to get rid of Lovie Smith because he wants his guy in there. And unless Lovie Smith made the playoffs and did something in the playoffs, Lovie Smith was not going to be back. They won 10 games on a team that was decimated with injuries and had an offensive line that was terrible, and that's not Lovie Smith's job to go draft offensive linemen.
Might have been one of the best jobs Lovie did when he was there.
I mean, Lovie's a good head coach, and he got fired. And so good head coaches get fired when new GMs come in, because that guy, and I understand that, and I'm not saying this to say Mike Mularkey's gone or not.
No,
but that guy typically wants his people around him.
And if you think about it, it makes perfect sense because you know we all look at GM candidates, and it's sort of a chessboard game. We all like to look at it and play coming and going. But from Dave Caldwell's perspective, he might get one shot at this in his life, and it's something he's worked for his entire life. And if this is his one shot, it makes sense that you want a guy that you feel good about. Does he feel good about Mike Mularkey? I have no idea. But it makes perfect sense that if you think this is your one shot to make your mark, to do what you want to do in your career, it makes perfect sense that you would want your guy.
I mean, how long is his – has anybody been reported how long the contract he signed is?
I don't know.
And so let's say it's 4 years. 3 years, 4 years. He has a limited window to prove to Shad Khan that he is the guy to lead this franchise to a Super Bowl championship.
Everybody gets a second chance.
Let's not kid ourselves. That is the only goal. The goal is not to be good or to be above average or, you know, fighting for a wild card. I mean, let's change the perspective. The goal should be to win a Super Bowl. So David Caldwell is going to come in here, and he's going to have to decide, I'm going to be ultimately judged as a GM. And like John said, this might be my only chance. And so I better feel good about everything I put underneath me. And so he's going to have to sit down with Mike Mularkey. And my guess is, Shad said, you evaluate it, and he's going to sit down with Mike Mularkey and make a decision if he feels like Mike Mularkey is his guy that can help him bring a championship ball club to Jacksonville.
And if he's not a guy to think that way, then Shad probably doesn't want him in the first place.
Right.
We need a break here at the bottom of the hour for news, and we're back, Joe, after this.
You got it, Brian. You can be rewarded just for being social at the new Jaguars Social League. Sign up, sync your social media platforms, whatever they may be, at jaguars.com/social league. You can earn points every time you post something Jaguars and use those points to win great prizes, including a chance to win tickets for the Jaguars game in London. That's jaguars.com/social league. News is next from the award-winning WOKV Newsroom. Then more of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Fanatics.com.
All right, the Metro PCS call-in lines are open, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. RG3 had surgery today, and the word from James Andrews was 6 to 8 months in the rehab, and a couple of years ago that would sound aggressive, but based on what Adrian Peterson did, doesn't seem to be beyond the pale. Thoughts on A, reconstructive surgery and what it means to quarterback since you've had it, and B, the whole controversy surrounding should he have been playing or should he not have been playing?
I don't know what it means anymore because Adrian Peterson has kind of blown the whole thing up with what it means.
I said in August, no way Adrian Peterson would be any good this year.
Yeah, and so and
Wes Welker also.
And Wes Welker, and the fact that he's had an ACL before and he came back and won the Heisman. And so it's not like the guy is foreign to this experience. I mean, he's done this before, and he understands what's ahead of him. And I don't know the guy, but everything you see about him, great character, great work ethic, leadership, great player, great athlete. I mean, my guess is he'll be fine. My guess is he'll be back out there sometime during training camp, and he'll probably, instead of running a 4.35, probably run a 4.38 and maybe a 4.4. And I don't think that makes a lick of a difference come time to play. The bigger story, I think, is he's got to learn to play the game a little bit different because I don't think you can hold up. I think the big story to me is the spread option is great and everything, but you can't hold up in the NFL. And everyone points to, well, Seattle runs a bit of it. No, they don't. I mean, they run a little bit of it.
Not like that. But not as their base.
I mean, Russell Wilson may run the ball once a game or twice a game, and he gets down immediately.
And the point you make, Tony, is that eventually playing that way,
it gets you
it's not necessarily this ACL. It's the number of hits and the gradual toll that it takes, and all of a sudden being a 4.41 his second year of and just
well, no, that affects
it just
your,
slows you down
and it affects your accuracy throwing the ball. I mean,
did he have rib issues early in the year too?
Concussion. I mean, he's beat up.
Right.
I mean, the guy, and as far as him playing or not, I completely disagree with the national media and the outcry against him playing football, and the fact that Mike Shanahan's taken the beating that he has is asinine and disgraceful to me. RG3 gets paid to play football. Mike Shanahan gets coached to win football games and to coach a team to win a championship. That's their job. The job of the doctor is to say whether you can play or not. RG3 was cleared to play football, let alone by one of the best surgeons of our era in James Andrews. He was supposed to play. During the game, he got hit. He was limping. And everyone says, well, he should have taken him out. RG3 was cleared to play, and he wanted to play.
And, Tony, you've been on the sideline.
You play. You play football. It's the playoffs. It's what you do. You don't worry about getting hurt. If you worry about getting hurt, then don't play the game. I mean, what the hypocrisy is, we killed Jay Cutler 3 years ago for not playing because he had a sprained MCL, and he didn't feel like he could play, and everyone killed him. Oh, how dare he not play? He took himself out of the game. And now they want RG3 to be taken out of the game, even though he wants to play and he's cleared to play. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I mean, 6 years ago or 5 years ago, Philip Rivers played a AFC title game on a torn ACL, and he was applauded. I thought it was great. He wanted to play. That's what you do. We get, as a football player, you got to play millions of dollars to play a game. And now, listen, there's a fine line. I'm not saying that. And doctors need to take guys out when they cannot play and they can't protect themselves and if they're going to hurt themselves. But it's not the job of the player if he wants to play. Now, if RG3 was out there and didn't feel like he can contribute and didn't feel like he could protect himself and was endangering himself, then he shouldn't play the game. I'm fine with that. And if the head coach felt like he did not give them the best chance of winning, then pull him. But outside of that, you play. You don't worry about, oh, gosh, how dare Mike Shanahan endanger RG3 like that. RG3 is endangering himself when he signed up, you know, as a high school kid to go play football. My goodness. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
I have a couple of thoughts on that. First of all you can do as a team, and, Tony, you've been on the sidelines, so you've seen it up close. I haven't. All you can do is have a decision-making process. You have a doctor who can speak to the coach and speak to the player. If the doctor is clearing and telling the coach he can play, and RG3, as you said, is saying, I want to play, I'm not sure what else you – all you can do is listen to your people in that situation.
Make a decision.
Second thing is James Andrews gains nothing by putting him back out on the field if he thinks that's the incorrect decision. This is not a situation where he's getting pressure from the Redskins to do this.
It hurts him.
Right. James Andrews, I think, has a pretty good practice making a pretty good living away from the Redskins. He doesn't have to worry about that. So I'm with you. I had no problem with it. And
I hate the fact that he got
hurt.
The
Cutler analogy is exactly right. Cutler's getting killed 3 years ago for coming out of a game, and now RG3, you know, Shanahan's getting killed for the exact same opposite reason.
Listen, and I agree. People say, well, the players need to be protected against themselves. I agree with that. Heck, I mean, listen, if anyone knows that, I do. There's many a days I think back and say, I wish I'd have, you know, done things a little bit different. But that's not the job of the head coach. The job of the head coach is not to protect the player against himself when it comes to injury. I thought the whole thing we were trying to get away from is coaches making medical decisions. That's the job of the doctor. Now, James Andrews, if James Andrews went to Mike Shanahan and said he can't play, his knee is not, it's dangerous and he shouldn't be out there, and then Mike Shanahan said, still put him out there, that's a problem. But that's not what happened. And James Andrews even said that. And the whole USA Today article that was written was completely out of context and it did not have all the facts because it misrepresented what James Andrews said. The week before, James Andrews said he went back, or 2 weeks before, he said he went back onto the field without me being able to evaluate him, and before Mike Shanahan even knew what was going on, RG3 just put himself back in. That happens. That happens in sport when you have competitive individuals who want to play. RG3, as far as I'm concerned, has gone up about 10 notches in my book as far as a guy I want to play with. You talk about a leader. This is a guy who wanted to be on the field and battle with his guys through everything as far as he could. And he pushed it, and that's what great players do. They push the envelope. And obviously until the injury where his knee got stuck in the turf and it went ugly, until that play, he had been cleared by the doctor, and the head coach made a decision thinking he was their best option to win a playoff game. What else is he supposed to do?
All right, final thought then before we take a break. You saw him. Didn't you do his first game?
Yes.
The Dial Global folks? Can he make the transition?
Yes.
Okay. He can get in the pocket and throw it?
I think he's a fabulous.
It will be a transition.
It'll be a transition. I think he's a fabulous athlete. I think he's an accurate thrower, and he has a cannon for an arm. And I think he's a very smart.
But is he a guy who can stand in the pocket?
Yes.
When his natural instinct is to,
I think you have to learn,
move and buy time.
Listen, he's always going to be a guy that is going to, when he feels like there's an opportunity, he's going to take off and run. I'm fine with that. Steve Young did that. I mean,
yeah,
he did that forever. I think what Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan are going to have to do, they have to limit that zone read option. If I was going to be critical of anything, is saying, listen, guys, you only can do that so much.
It cannot be a base to your offense.
It can't be the base because you're going to get the kid killed.
All right, we need a break. Come back and take a look at this weekend's games. Joe.
Are you getting your Jaguars rewards? Well, sign up at rewards.jaguars.com. You get cash back or credit for future season ticket purchases every time you shop online using the Jaguars Rewards website. That's rewards.jaguars.com. You shall be rewarded with one more segment of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna if you just keep it right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer-A-Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. Need more info? Just check out the Jaguars ticket office, 904-633-2000, or visit jaguars.com.
All right, about 7.5, 8 minutes left in the program here, and time to look at this weekend's games, and we'll start on Saturday. The Baltimore Ravens travel to take on Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, and you're talking about a Denver team that's as hot as any in the National Football League, and a Baltimore team that seems to be playing on guts as much as anything.
Yeah, it, it's hard to not see Denver winning that game. I think Peyton had an unbelievable year and continues to. And I didn't think the Colts Ravens game last week was really a game between two teams that I thought had a chance to get a Super Bowl. So I'd say Denver wins it.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that you even give Baltimore a chance is the fact that Peyton Manning has had his struggles in the playoffs. He does not have the best playoff record. But outside of that, I see no reason to pick Baltimore at all. I mean, I think Denver probably is the best all-around team, the way they're playing both offensively and defensively. You got to give Jack Del Rio a lot of credit. I mean, that's a top-five unit. I think they ended up third in the NFL, and they are playing really good defense. And they beat the Ravens up there already once. Denver is a tough place to play in the playoffs. And I think Denver wins that, and I think they probably win it by at least 10 points.
Yeah, one thought on Peyton's troubles in the playoffs. They usually came against teams that had traditionally given them trouble in the regular season. They came against New England. They came against Pittsburgh. They came against San Diego. All those teams were always big matchups, problems for Peyton and the Colts. The Ravens this season were not a big problem for Denver during the regular season. So I wouldn't expect that to be an issue this week. Next week, I'd expect it to be an issue.
All right, San Francisco handled Green Bay at Lambeau on opening day. Here's the rematch, though. This time it's in San Francisco.
Boy, it's a tough one.
Are you doing a game this weekend?
Yeah, I'm doing Atlanta.
Okay.
Atlanta-Seattle. I had to pick these games for Dial Global, and I went back and forth on this one. I started off with San Francisco because I think they're very physical, and the offensive line for the Packers is so bad. You're going to get Justin Smith back, which makes a huge difference on that defense. The other side of it is 49ers aren't real good outside as far as at the corners, I don't think. And I think that if you can protect the quarterback, there are plays to be made. And for whatever reason, I mean, Aaron Rodgers was the most sacked guy in the NFL, and it just doesn't seem to bother him. I mean,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. I mean, most quarterbacks that just drives crazy. It does not bother him.
Didn't we say pregame show when we were out there that he invites a lot of those himself because
he holds the ball up.
Yeah,
and so
trying to make a play down the field.
Right, and so I'm going to go with the Packers because I'm not sold on Colin Kaepernick. I still think that was a bad decision by Jim Harbaugh. I would have stuck with Alex Smith. I know that Kaepernick has more upside, but where you are and where that team was and what they did last year and what they were coming off of, I would stick with Alex Smith, and I think that ends up being the difference. I think the difference is the quarterback play, and so I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers.
I usually believe you go with quarterbacks in the playoffs 9 times out of 10, and I believe that here. I think the Packers win the game. The only thing that keeps sticking in my mind is how the 49ers beat the Saints last year with Drew Brees clearly the better quarterback.
But Alex Smith played really well.
He did, and I have a tough time picking against Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs.
All right, Sunday, Seattle at Atlanta. For Seattle, it means going from Seattle to Washington, back to the state of Washington, now another bi-coastal flight.
I'm going to go with Atlanta. I think Atlanta's pretty dang good. And I think Mike Smith and Matt Ryan and the Dimitroff kind of trio.
They figured it out.
I think they get a win. I think they win their first playoff game. I think it's too much to ask. I think it's a lot to ask. Seattle, I think they'll be ready to play. I think Pete Carroll's done a great job. There was a great article I read, I think it might have been either on Yahoo or ESPN, about how he and Schneider built and transformed that entire organization from the culture and the type of players and their philosophy and what they've done and where they're going. So I have a lot of respect for Pete and what they've done. I think Russell Wilson, God, he's really playing good football. They're physical. But Clemens is hurt. They lost their best pass rusher with an ACL. I think that matters. And I think going back, I think Atlanta, I think that place will be rocking. There is not – I tried to get a couple tickets because I had a buddy in Atlanta. And so I called the organization, and they said, well, if you need to, we can call the CFO and get two up in the upper deck. But there's not a ticket left in that building.
StubHub has 6,902 available.
Really?
Yeah. There was a story –
Never mind then. We call StubHub because they were like...
There was a story in this morning's Atlanta Journal-Constitution that there were more than 9,000 tickets.
Really? That made it sound like it was impossible to get a ticket.
On the secondary market.
I'm calling the dang... My guy in the...
They just didn't want to help you.
They didn't want to help me.
Just pointed out.
But my point is whether there's tickets for me or not. I think there is... I think the place will be rocking. It's a loud building. I just think Matt Ryan... I'm going to go with the quarterback in this situation too. Julio Jones, Roddy White... I think the defense is healthy, rested John Abraham. Got a week off. That ankle will be okay. I like Atlanta in this game.
I think Atlanta blows them out. Not because I don't think Seattle's good. I think Seattle might be a Super Bowl team in the next couple of years. The back-and-forth thing scares you with Seattle.
It's a lot of travel.
And I think Atlanta either blows them out or they lose because there's a lot of pressure on that team. If that thing gets close, then all of a sudden this not winning a playoff game. I was in Indy for a couple of years before they won a playoff game up there. It takes – and then the Colts finally won one by blowing somebody out. It's tough to win close if you've got that hanging over your head.
All right. Final game, Houston at New England.
I think New England blows their doors off.
Yeah, it won't be close. And it's not because that Shaughnessy column was any good. It's just because everybody saw that. Shaughnessy basically said it's over. It's a big controversy.
What happened?
Dan Shaughnessy wrote a very Woody Page-like column, basically just taking the Texans out and saying they were terrible. It was going to be a joke, you know, the whole thing. Dan Shaughnessy works for the Boston Globe. Very similar to the Woody Page incident in 96. But I just think New England's really good. They're playing at home, and the Texans aren't peaking.
Yeah, I like New England. I think Tom Brady, New England, that defense is playing pretty good football for the Patriots right now.
Plus, you got to want to see Manning and Brady one more time.
Yeah, and I think they are destined, whether you believe in fate or destiny or not. But I think Manning and Brady are destined to play in Mile High.
Can we get a foot of snow that day?
I don't know.
I'm saying that would make it even better.
And it's neat because 2 years ago, you never thought you'd have a chance to see that again. And it'd be neat to see it one more time.
Yeah, so I think it'll be Green Bay and Atlanta. And I think it'll be Denver and New England. I think we'll have two great conference title matchups in 10 days from now. Sunday.
All right, guys, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Joe, thank
thanks,
you.
Brian.
Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks, Logs.
WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV FM, Ponte Vedra Beach.